Welcome to the FDD Events Podcast. I'm Cliff Mate, founder and president of FDD, and pleased to share with you the following conversation. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast so you don't miss out on future FDD events.
Good morning. It's Friday, March 15th. The Ides of March. The war in the Middle East is now 161 days old. I'm Jonathan Shanzer, Senior Vice President for Research at Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Welcome back to the FDD Morning Brief. Tensions continue to flare in the U.S.-Israel relationship. We'll get to that a little bit later, but just a reminder that we try to stay nonpartisan here at the FDD Morning Brief and at FDD in general. Still, we have every right to call balls and strikes, so that's exactly what we do, while trying to stay focused on the battlefield, not the political theater. So keep tuning in here three times a week. In a few short minutes, we'll have Jonathan Conricus on the show. You may recall he was our very first guest here at the FDD Morning Brief. He was an IDF spokesman who had been called up for reserve duty back then. Today, he's a free man, and he's actually now a senior fellow with FDD. So hang tight for a few minutes, and you'll hear what he has to say. But before that, I want to talk about what's happening in Gaza right now. Khaled Abu Tome, an Arab journalist in Israel, reported yesterday that two Gazans who were ready to administer the Gaza Strip were killed by Hamas. This is not particularly surprising. I mean, Hamas is a brutal terrorist organization that cares little for the Palestinian people, which is somewhat ironic because it claims to be fighting for the Palestinian cause. In reality, it's fighting for the Iranian cause, maybe the Muslim Brotherhood too. But actually, what struck me most about this killing of moderate Gazans is that it didn't register whatsoever here in Washington. That's because this city was going bonkers yesterday over Chuck Schumer's shameful meddling in Israel's domestic affairs. I'm not going to touch that right now, but I am going to say this. If the White House wants Gaza to be run by Gazans in favor of peace and coexistence, Hamas needs to be destroyed. And that means that Israel needs to finish the job in the town of Rafah. I know everyone is concerned about stoking tensions during Ramadan, and they're worried about the 1.4 million displaced people sheltering in Rafah. I'm concerned about that too, but we cannot keep warning Israel to stay out of Rafah indefinitely unless we want to see the murder of more Gazans that have the courage and inclination to rule Gaza on the day after. The president needs to remember how this war started, and he needs to think about what will happen if it doesn't end the way it should. Reports suggest the president may have approved surgical Israeli operations to start targeting Hamas and Rafah. This would be an important development. Nothing less than the stability of the region is at stake. Now for your headlines. Headline one, 6 weeks after an Iran-backed militia killed three service members in Jordan, the White House has approved a sanctions waiver that gives Iran continued access to more than $10 billion. Here's the thing. This money is restricted in certain ways. It's designed to allow Iran to import approved goods and settle certain debts. So that's what the official line out of the White House is going to be, I'm sure. But as a former Treasury analyst, I'll just say this. Money is fungible. Iran will now be able to spend other pots of money on the terrorist groups that have been attacking Israel and the United States now for more than 5 months. Admittedly, Iran-backed militias have halted many of their attacks. Even the Houthis in Yemen have slowed down. But they'll come roaring back with new weapons and capabilities. So let's just forget for a minute that we're essentially funding Hamas and Hezbollah's attacks on Israel. This is going to blow back on America. Just watch. Headline two, Melanie Swan at the London Telegraph reports that Hezbollah has been smuggling its weapons through Europe. Italy, Spain, and Belgium. These are the places where Hezbollah smuggling vessels have docked before importing weapons to Lebanon, where they have been used to target Israel since the Iran-backed group started attacking Israel on October 8th. It cannot be overstated, folks. Hezbollah is a global terrorist organization. It has massive operations in Latin America, which my colleague Emanuele Ottolenghi has documented for years. The group operates throughout Africa. It has carried out attacks in European countries like Bulgaria and Greece. It is engaged in money laundering here in the United States. More needs to be done to counter these activities. Until now, too little pressure has been placed on this group that has quietly suffocated the government of Lebanon while operating with impunity around the world. And headline three, the Palestinian Authority now has a new prime minister and his name is Mohammed Mustafa. This is big, folks. Actually, no, it's not. The guy they just named to head the Palestinian reform process is a longtime corrupt crony of Mahmoud Abbas, who himself has been president of the Palestinian Authority for 19 years. Reminder, he was only supposed to have a four-year term, and he's not going anywhere. This is a joke. Amidst all the talk about putting the Palestinians on a track to statehood, installing another corrupt pal of Abu Mazen won't generate a shred of legitimacy among Palestinians, let alone the international community. Corruption continues to be a gaping hole in the Palestinian Titanic. Now watch as everyone cheers because the deck chairs were just rearranged. And speaking of Titanic, Jonathan Conricus is very tall. He's also very smart. Oh, and he's half Swedish. Bet you didn't know that. You may recall that Jonathan was a regular on American airwaves during the first few months of the war, serving as a spokesperson for the IDF. He was the FDD Morning Brief's earliest and among the most popular guests. So now that he's shed his fatigues and returned to civilian life, we thought it would be fun to bring him back on. It's even more fun now that he works for FDD as a senior fellow. Welcome, Jonathan Conricus.
Welcome. Shalom, Jonathan. A pleasure to be here. Thanks for the intro.
Great to have you back. So first, I want to ask you what's going on in Egypt. You and I have talked about this offline, and I've talked about it here on the Morning Brief. And now I actually see some headlines out of Israel that the IDF is warning or perhaps informing the Egyptians that Israel is going into Rafah. I don't know when. I don't know how. But we've talked about this. Do you think there are large tunnels along the Egyptian-Gaza border? And if so, what do you think needs to be done?
Yes, good morning. I think, you know, you always zoom out and look at the big picture when you address a topic. And I think we have to look at Israel-Egypt relations and take stock of, maybe assess how Israel has been dealing with its Arab neighbor, whom we have peace with since 1979. But if you think of it, all the weapons that were used by Hamas to murder Israelis on the 7th of October, and all of the weapons that have been used by Hamas and the Islamic Jihad since, in 5 months of fighting, they all came through tunnels from Egypt. Now, Egypt didn't supply and they didn't manufacture, but they facilitated and they allowed these truckloads, these almost endless truckloads of weapons to come in to Gaza, arm Hamas, and then of course to be used against Israel. And for many, many years, Egypt has been playing a double game here. On one hand, allowing and facilitating the flow, almost unrestricted flow of weapons from Iran and other smugglers through Sinai into the tunnels and then into Gaza, into the hands of Hamas and Islamic Jihad and others. But then on the other hand, Egypt has been mediating ceasefire efforts each and every time there's been a military conflict between Israel and Hamas. Think of it, in 2009, 12, 14, and 21, there were rounds of fighting between Israel and Egypt. They all ended with Egyptian mediation and with tremendous diplomatic applause and credits for the Egyptians. In my mind, the reality is clear in Gaza. I've been inside Hamas tunnels, smuggling tunnels in Rafah myself as a younger man more than 20 years ago. They existed then. They do exist now. There's clear evidence of it. And I think that what we will see in a matter of weeks, now that the Israelis are finally saying that they're launching the operation, and these are push notifications from now, Israel is finally launching the operation against Hamas in Rafah. I think that in a matter of weeks, we will also see footage of said tunnels underneath Rafah, between 50 and 150 feet deep tunnels. Think of them as highways, not as little cramped smuggling tunnels. And think of them as the strategic supply of weapons, goods, ammunition, personnel, and money that Hamas has. So to summarize, Israel needs sooner rather than later to go in, clear up the remaining parts of Hamas in Rafah, dig down, sever the tunnels and expose them to the world so that there are no doubts what Israel did and why it did it. and then start the second stage of our tremendous endeavor, which is to rebuild and de-radicalize the Gaza Strip.
This is very specific information here, Jonathan. I definitely appreciate this. I dare say it may be breaking a bit of news. Let's talk a little bit about the aid. Israel continues to take a lot of heat for not providing enough aid to the people of Gaza. This is what we hear out of the U.S., but also other countries around the world. But I also note there's been a pretty serious uptick in efforts across Gaza to ensure that more food and supplies get through, definitely during Ramadan. What's happening on that front? Is this good news?
I think I'll say something that might surprise some of our viewers who are perhaps positively inclined towards Israel. And I'll say this. Israel could have, and in my mind, should have, dealt with the whole humanitarian PR issue better. We should have front-loaded our intentions, and we should have taken ownership of the issue and not allowed ourselves to be exposed to the whims and the collaboration between UNRWA, the UN facilities in Gaza, and Hamas. And that is, in fact, what happened. Israel reached out and asked, can you please help us provide humanitarian aid to the Palestinians? Can you help us move the civilian population from soon to be war-torn northern Gaza to the south? Can you help us build a humanitarian zone in southern Gaza so that civilians are out of harm's way? And we got continuous no, no, no as an answer from those alleged humanitarian organizations that rely on UN and US and European and other countries' funding. Now, we should have acted differently. I think that what Israel is doing now is implementing the hard-learned lesson, understanding that the broadest and most difficult sword that our enemies and adversaries are using against Israel to undermine Israel's extremely legitimate fight against Hamas, the sword that's being used is the humanitarian one and the provision of aid. And I think that in the past, we didn't do it well enough and smart enough and fast enough. But I think that what Israel is doing now with American help, with involvement of the UAE, also with the same Egyptian country that I mentioned in the previous answer, there's a lot of efforts going on. Think of it now, as we are speaking from the US, there are three ground corridors open. There's the one that existed from almost the first day of the fighting, Egypt, through Rafah. There's the ground corridor from Kerem Shalom in Israel, the southern area, the border crossing, that is open, and there are hundreds of trucks being delivered every day from Israel into Gaza through that border crossing, which of course was active before the war, and then it was closed for security reasons for a short period of time, and then reopened, and Israel is pumping through aid into that corridor to most of the displaced Palestinians who are in southern Gaza. A third and new ground corridor facilitated by Israel is in the northern part of the Gaza Strip, where Israel has for the first time paved a road, a new road, in the area of, southwest of the Gaza City. And we've done a pilot run with a few tens of trucks from Israel into the northern part of Gaza City so that we don't need to travel south in order then to travel north and to provide aid to the civilians that are in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. And in addition to that, tremendous amounts, tens of thousands of tons of aid are being airdropped by the US, by the Jordanians, by the UAE, and by, I think, France, and a few other countries have chipped in as well. And we see parachutes of everything good being delivered from the air directly to Gazan civilians in various locations, mostly in the northern part of the Gaza Strip, but not only. And the last endeavor, which is also ongoing now, is the maritime route. Israel is facilitating the flow of aid via the sea. And as President Biden declared, the U.S. military is now in the early stages of building a temporary pier that will be attached to the existing Gaza port, which is not a deep sea port. So big vessels do not have access to it. And therefore, there's need to build an artificial pier, a temporary pier that is now being worked on together with Israel and the various parts of the U.S. Navy and combat commands. And that will be a very good thing because it will provide aid directly to Gazans without being having to rely on UNRWA, and of course, without having Hamas in the middle, being able to interfere or steal goods and to then sell it to Palestinians, which, by the way, has happened many times. I've seen pictures on social media by brave Gazans who have shown that they're being forced to buy goods, humanitarian goods that were provided and were labeled as not intended for sale, humanitarian aid, and they go to the market and they have to buy it. Why is that the case? Because Hamas and other crooks in the Gaza Strip steal humanitarian aid and sell it at exorbitant prices to the civilians. If they don't do that, then they take the aid, instead of giving it to civilians, they take it to Hamas fighters. And we've seen tremendous abuse of the generous international aid provided, not reflected upon enough in international media. And if I summarize, yes, Israel could have and should have been better from the beginning, but I think that what Israel is doing now are sincere, serious, and effective efforts to provide humanitarian aid to Palestinians in Gaza in order to, and we're keeping our eyes on the prize here, in order to defeat Hamas. Israel isn't an aid agency, and we're not supposed to be addressed as one. Israel is a sovereign country defending itself, defending its civilians against the future attacks that we want to prevent. And we are in the business of providing aid because we need to do that so that we can defeat Hamas. And some people get confused about the chronology of events and what comes first and what comes last. But I'm happy that now it appears as if the operation in Gaza, in Rafah, is underway. And parallel to that, tremendous aid is being provided to Palestinians.
Let's hope it continues. And I do appreciate the self-critique there of Israel. I think it's important to note that, Israel doesn't do everything that it's supposed to all the time, but it does appear to be righting the ship, which I think is a good sign. Last question for you, and it's the one that everybody's talking about, and we don't need to belabor this point, but what do you make of these remarks by Senator Chuck Schumer yesterday calling for the end of this government in Israel? I'm not asking for you to weigh in on what you think about Bibi Netanyahu, but I am asking what you think about what's going on right now in the U.S.-Israel relationship.
Yeah, as a foreign national, I make a point of always addressing elected officials in the U.S. with respect, even the Ilhan Omars and the AOCs of the world. If you're an elected official, then I, as a foreigner, treat that with respect. I think that these statements were very unproductive, uncalled for, and they are doubly unproductive. The first part of the unproductiveness is that it strengthens our enemies, because our enemies understand the importance of the strategic bond between Israel and the U.S. And when they see important people in the U.S. degrading and weakening the strength of that bond, they, our enemies, the Iranians, Hamas, Hezbollah, and others, take joy and probably bargain harder, strengthen their positions, and know that they can squeeze Israel in hostage deals and other things as a result of that. Second thing is that if the goal is to create political change in Israel, then that is probably the worst thing to do. And to apply external pressure, I think it will only serve exactly the opposite effect of what the senator allegedly wanted to achieve. And third thing, I think it's undue, uncalled for, and frankly out of bounds. And I think that these things are better said directly, respectfully. Israel is a sovereign nation, yes, dependent on U.S. military aid, but Israel serves American foreign policy interest better than, I don't know, any country, definitely not in the Middle East, but I struggle to find any other country that has been more of a loyal ally and more of a defender of American democratic values and interests in the region ever since 1967 and onwards. So I hope that that will be the last time those kinds of remarks are made. And I think that the pushback from declared non-Bibi supporters in Israel, of which there are many, and they have lots of platforms, they're saying, I may not support Bibi, but this isn't any of your business. And I've heard that said by many people who the tweet before and after that are criticizing Bibi. So I think that sums up where many Israelis stand and what the real importance of that statement was.
All right, well, we're going to leave it there. I think we're probably haven't heard the last of that, but we'll certainly continue to track it. Thank you, Jonathan Conricus, FTD Senior Fellow, for taking time out to join us today on the FTD Morning Brief.
Thank you, Jonathan. Have a good day.
Okay, here's what FTD has on tap for you today. My colleague Sinan GD published a new piece in Foreign Policy previewing the local elections that Turkey will hold on March 31st. If President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's allies prevail, Sinan warns of a potential constitutional reform effort that would allow the president another term beyond his current limit of 2028. This guy is giving Vladimir Putin a run for his money. Over at FTD's Long War Journal, Caleb Weiss is keeping a close eye on Al-Qaeda's affiliate in East Africa, Al-Shabaab. The terror group is wreaking havoc in Somalia, where security forces had contained things for nearly 2 years. In recent years, Shabaab has recaptured several important areas in central Somalia that the government in Mogadishu previously touted as successes in its campaign. This is another must-read over there at FTD's Long War Journal. And finally, my colleagues Brad Bowman and Rich Goldberg are out with a very important new report, really a must read, on Israel's defense industrial base, or DIB, as we like to call it. They detail the weapons that Israel will likely need most amidst rising threats from Hezbollah and Iran, and amidst tensions with the United States, which is Israel's top weapons supplier by far. Brad and Rich recommend a hybrid strategy focused on quickly acquiring key munitions in large quantities from the United States, while making targeted investments in Israel that would allow the country to slowly expand its domestic production. This is a crucial issue that we're going to continue to track here at FTD. That's it for today. Read our expert analysis on our website, FTD.org. Read our quick takes on X at FTD and support our work with a tax-deductible donation at FTD.org/invest. Tune in Monday for another installment of the FTD Morning Brief. We'll be speaking to Flor Hassan Nahum. She is the deputy mayor of Jerusalem. We'll hear what she has to say about the war and the impact that it's had on Israel's capital. Have a great weekend, folks. I'm Jonathan Shanzer, signing off for FTD.